And we're off. Welcome back to Deep Thinking.
Off the deep end.
Off the deep end. Not just any, but the premier, exclusive, highest quality motorcycle road racing podcast available in this universe or any other parallel one. He is Ed Sorbo. You can find Mr. Sorbo on the web at lindemanengineering.com. And I am Michael Gugis. You can find my insane babblings at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, where you get daily updates about what I think about the world of motorcycling. Ed, let's...
Number 18. And right? By the way, it's actually le-suspension.com.
What? It doesn't say Lindemann Engineering?
No. Well, it says le-suspension.
Then whose website?
Nobody knows how to spell Lindemann or engineering.
Okay, so what is it?
le-suspension.com. You can do a Google search for Lindemann Engineering and you'll find it and it's all good. So, but I wanted to point out that if we're exclusive,
right,
then that guarantees something. I forgot whatever you were saying.
It means that nobody else is in our class.
Exactly.
No one can compare to us.
Because we're exclusive, hence we're the best in
right,
that category.
Absolutely.
We're geniuses.
Well, haven't you read any of the fine print in a car ad? It will say, try not to. Number
goes one, by too fast.
Number one gas mileage in its class. And it's like a Toyota Camry. And then you read the fine print. It's like, in the class of Toyota Camrys.
Yes.
You know, when you hear an ad about a drug,
the new drug has less side effects than the old drug.
Right.
You know how they do that?
How do they do that?
They give you the minimum dosage of the new drug and the maximum dosage of the old drug.
Right.
And you're not comparing apples to apples. Of course you get more side effects if you take more of the shit.
Oh, yeah.
You need critical thinking, folks. Don't believe anything you hear.
Oh, I have a
question. Least of all us.
Yeah, right. Well, I have a question about this.
Okay.
If you're le-suspension.com,
correct,
who have I been sending hate mail to at lindemanengineering.com?
If you go and look at your address that you've been sending, you'll see that it says ed@le-suspension.com.
This would explain the people out in front of my house with the pitchforks and spit.
You know, it's funny, right? None of us know our friends' phone numbers anymore, right?
Right?
We just push, you know... their name or whatever. Like,
exactly.
Whenever I have to fill out an application for a race entry and it always has contact information, I have to grab my phone and look up my wife's cell phone number because I don't know it. I just push the button.
Hey, I just heard from a friend of mine for the first time in about 3 months and she had lost her phone. And, you know, and is slowly gathering back all of these phone numbers. You know, it's at a certain point, we're not going to have separate phone numbers or email addresses anymore. We're just going to have an identifier.
You're going to be able to go to museums in the future, and they're going to have displays of these crazy things stuffed with scraps of paper, and it'll say address books.
Rolodex.
People will be like, what are those?
What is a Rolodex?
So do we have a topic for this subject?
Yeah, Blockbuster Video.
We do? That's a topic?
I had to explain.
They're gone. They failed.
I had to explain to my students today what Blockbuster Video was.
That's sad.
And why. Well, Blockbuster didn't have it. But why the adult section in the back?
No, I don't know the adult
section. Yeah, right, Ed. Please. That one of them had a brass plate above the doorway in memorial. The Ed Sorbo Memorial Adult Video Collection. I had to explain why adult videos in VHS form went away. Because there was still a social stigma in being the guy who had to go back behind the beaded curtain or through the swinging doors. Now we have the internet.
Yeah, I'm sure that you can chart porn use, and when the internet came out, it went through the roof, right?
Well,
but you know, it's funny, people, I just said that Blockbuster Video failed, but really they didn't.
No.
Think about the total amount of money that they made while they were going.
While the technology was in place, right?
It was a great way to watch movies, man, when it was new.
God.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, just
it's amazing, though. It's like watching TV. Once you get 82 channels, you're like, there's nothing on TV. What could that be? You go into Blockbuster, you walk up and down the aisle.
Exactly.
I can't find a damn movie.
There's 300 movies in there. There's nothing I want
there's
to
82
see.
Movies by Sylvester Stallone. You can't find one?
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. Not at well. 82 movies by Sylvester Stallone.
You're
him. Right, there is nothing to watch. It's just time to throw yourself off a cliff.
So topic. Something
topic.
About
MotoGP and Ducati. MotoGP and Ducati. I had posted several weeks ago after the first test at at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, I had posted that even though they weren't fastest, even though they weren't even all that much faster than the GP14, the last version of it, if you listened and read the comments by the Andreas, the Andrea twins I call them, because Andrea Dovizioso and Iannone are the two Ducati factory riders in MotoGP this year, if you read their comments, they were happy. They were giddy. They were like, this thing turns. Okay, it's not fast yet, but I can ride this thing, right?
How horrible does it have to be to go ride a bike all the time,
right,
that never feels the way your motorcycle does? Everybody listening to this,
right,
rides a bike that feels just fine when you turn it in,
right, and it feels fine, and they know that this is good enough,
right? But if you gave me your bike for 10 minutes, I could make a change to it so that it would be horrible in the middle of the corner,
right.
I could change the geometry. And then you could go ride that for one lap, and you'd come and you'd go, don't do that to me again!
Don't ever do this to me.
And these guys were riding a bike that effectively felt like that
month after month.
Yeah.
That's
on TV.
Right?
In witnesses.
Right? And it's really, at a certain point, it almost doesn't even matter what your paycheck is. You're like, okay, you know, but that's why I wrote a couple of days ago, these guys are acting like inmates that got a call from the governor at 11:59. They're like, this thing works. It freaking works.
So my question was, how did Ducati get it wrong
for so long, right? What took you guys so long?
You knew it wasn't working, so you'd figure they just start changing shit. Even if you just start changing shit randomly
right?
There's only however many things you can change, right?
And it's either going to get better or worse.
And you learn something from that, and then you, right?
Oh, let's not do that again.
And so you had a great answer to that question.
Which is success.
Yeah, they had enough success that they thought, well, maybe it is okay.
Just enough success.
And mix that with their crazy culture,
right?
We have to have this kind of frame or that kind of frame, or we believe in this idea. You see a lot of examples. People have a problem,
right?
And then they tell you all the things they did to try to figure out what went wrong. And every single thing that they did was a valid, reasonable thing.
Right.
The problem was their first thing was wrong. Right? They thought they ran out of gas. Right? And really, there's a rag stuffed into the air box and they're not getting any air. So you can do all this correct shit that would fix running out of gas, but it's not going to fix your problem, right?
A couple of years ago at Auto Club Speedway, I was convinced that my bike was starving for fuel until I left the pits with the thing just absolutely topped off and it still died in the first right-hander. And it was the cutoff switch. I had taped it into the tip-over switch. I had taped it into place 5 or 6 years prior, and the tape finally let go.
Damn, that tape wasn't good enough.
That
only lasted 5 years.
What are you going to do?
Hold on. We're going to talk about tape more?
No. Anything from Hickory Farms?
Still nothing from Hickory Farms.
Oh, come on, people.
However, somebody on Facebook who heard you mentioning Hickory Farms, but who had not heard the original post,
right,
sent me a message. I love your show. You guys are funny. You got to tell me what Hickory Farms thing is. So
okay.
I explained it to her, and she says she's working her way through the older shows.
Okay.
I say sit your ass down and get it done. A couple of hours, and you listen to them all one after the other.
Oh.
You're fully up to speed.
I thought you were going to say, you sit down and get it done, call Hickory Farms, and send us some
that
snacks.
That would work as well.
Okay. So it's success. It's success. Now, Ducati did a few things, okay, did a few things that absolutely steered them down the wrong path because it worked for a little while. First thing they did.
This is Michael holding his hand up so that I can't say what I'm about to say.
Which is
because he doesn't want to share the mic.
What are you talking about?
I was going to mention that the mistake that they made was they put an alien on the bike who could win no matter what it
is.
Make them look like their bike was good. But back up even farther than that.
I was going to say, let's go back further than that. The first thing they did was they built a mother of a rocket ship from the first
day. So
that
was the big thing, right?
They were winning.
The thing had so much acceleration compared to everybody else
mm-hmm.
that you could stop in the corner, right? And then go.
Exactly.
And so then the part where it's not turning the way you need it to turn, it kind of doesn't matter. Because you're like, woo, watch the straightaway, buddy!
Exactly, right? You know? And that was even before, in the pre-Stoner eras, that's what it was like.
Yeah, weren't they the first guys to make the tiny tail? They're like, we don't care about aerodynamics.
They did.
We got so much power.
They did so much.
So they had crazy power.
Yeah.
They had crazy rider.
Well, then
that's making them think everything else is good.
Well, they had a couple of other things that went along with the early years of crazy power. Now, that, like I said, the bike was freaking fast, okay? They also had the trellis frame, which they understood. They knew how to make that work up to the limitations of where the trellis frame works. And this was
But you're not building a bridge. You're building a frame.
Yes. And the other thing was that during this period, we had a tire company competition.
Yep.
So
lots of variables.
Michelin builds bikes. Michelin builds tires that makes Yamaha and Honda happy.
Yep.
And Bridgestone was looking for a dance partner and said to Ducati, we will build, you know, whatever tire you want us to build. And it worked. It worked
I want to see that ad.
What?
We make a tire that's so good, it'll fix your Ducati.
It'll fix your Ducati, right? No matter what pile you ride. You know, that's not entirely true. We love Ducatis. As a matter of fact, if anybody would like to send us some Ducatis, you can reach me. Anyway.
Got a great argument for how they got into this hole.
There's one other thing.
The
one other element that's really important here, okay? Ducati's happy about winning the championship, but I don't think that's the way they measure success. I think for that small a company, they're kind of like Suzuki or Aprilia or Kawasaki when they were in the game. If they can get on the podium halfway regularly and win two Grand Prix a year, good enough. And that's what they were doing prior to the Stoner era.
Okay.
They win a couple of Grand Prix, they're on pole. Life is good, you know. They look good, and that's what you're trying to do is make
the bike
look good.
So you're saying they're a small company; they don't have to win all the time for it to be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially
right?
if you're marketing the new Ducati to your existing Ducati customer.
Exactly.
He's already loves you,
right?
He's already goes, you know, I want the red one,
right?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So we have a bunch of explanations that sound reasonable.
It's going great.
I got a question for you, though.
I didn't do it.
Okay. So this guy, just some guy off the street named Jerry Burgess, walks in with this guy rider, and they ride the bike and they go, "Oh, this isn't working so good," right? Do you discount Rossi when he says, "Gee, I think it needs to have XYZ changed"? And then I'm pretty sure that the guy named Jerry takes a tape measure and goes, "Hey, dude, your swing arm pivot's in the wrong place," or the relationship between the swing arm pivot and the countershaft sprocket, or the trail,
Right.
That guy, I mean, I have an idea in my head of what geometry should be and how I'm paying attention to that stuff all the time. And so if you give me a bike and it's doing crazy stuff and I make a change that I know it's supposed to do this and it does this other thing, I'm going to be going first. I'm going to go, "Hey, was this bike cartwheeled down the road and you didn't tell me about it?"
No,
it wasn't. Okay. And second, we need to measure this. Oh, dude, that's crazy. How do they then go, "Sorry, we're not going to do that"?
Well, number two, you go, "Okay, I asked you guys to drop the forks an inch. Did
Whatever
we actually do that?
Yeah.
Was that actually done?" Because sometimes that, you know, what was the example you use? The bike is getting badder.
Rossi and Jerry have communication.
They're
not going to make that mistake.
So the first, here's I think.
That was Barros, by the way.
Yeah, that was.
Listen to the old podcast and you'll hear that story.
It's a spectacular
story.
It's
badder.
It's badder. You're trying to kill me. Okay, so first you have to prove that the bike sucks that bad. Because your problem...
They proved it over and over and over again.
No, but it takes a while to do this. You have to prove that the bike is bad. And remember, this is a bike that was essentially the one that Stoner was able to win on.
Well, that's a big part of the equation, right?
Your success...
You think you've proven that your thing is good.
Right.
And then somebody else comes along and it's not working.
Right.
Well, maybe he isn't a screw. Maybe it is the bike.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's the rider, not the bike. Right.
When do you decide? So you.
Or in this case, when do you decide? Look, we don't have Stoner anymore. It doesn't matter if it worked for Stoner. Right? That's my thinking. I signed up Rossi. I think I'm going to build a bike for Rossi. Yeah. I'm going to go with build bike for Rossi. We'll take A, please.
Or excuse me. Yeah, I'm sorry. Hold on. Building a new bike's kind of expensive. We just spent a whole bunch of money on this one. Patton Oswalt is a stand-up comedian. He does what they call punch-up in Hollywood, okay? In the old days, they would get some comedians around the table. They'd show them the movie that they had produced, and they'd go, "Okay, we need to move this part, cut this part, change this around." Nowadays, the last one, he talks about this in one of his stand-ups. He says he walks in, listens to the movie, watches the thing, and they start saying that, "Okay, we're going to need to cut this, move this." And they go, no, you don't understand. We're $180 million into this already. We're not cutting anything out. We're not changing the order of anything. And he's like,
so what's the point of
this? What exactly am I supposed to be doing here? And what they
you're
told
supposed to laugh?
No, they told him, you're supposed to think up funny lines that can be shouted off camera over the footage to try to make it funny.
Like a really bad radio program.
Exactly.
Or podcast.
So that's kind of where Ducati is when Rossi shows up. Is he's like, this bike is, you know, this doesn't work really well. And they're like, we just built this motherfucker. You're going to ride it for a while and be, you know, make sure it's not us.
Let's point out that all of this conversation is predicated on the idea that they really are doing better and going faster.
Oh, they
right? It was only a 2-day of 3-day test, right? You don't really know
right.
what the other guys were trying to do.
Right.
They might have been just testing
Absolutely.
Stuff, planning to go fast on the last day, yada, yada. It's still just testing. And I don't know how many – I saw the time. I
right.
only know one lap time.
Right, right.
You know, did
All
he
– All that –
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw somebody said he was on the hard tire, but maybe he did only 2 laps on that tire. I don't know.
All of that's true. All of that's true. Although
12 inches to the foot.
People are still freaking about, you know, or people are so freaked out about that whole tire thing. David Emmett from Moto Matters actually went through every photo he could find of all the photographers at the test. Couldn't find a picture of the Ducati on the soft tire. All of that's true. But here's what I'm judging on, that there's real improvement. It's the tone of voice of the riders.
You know that?
That's a
right.
big
it's hard
deal.
To fake that shit.
It's, they actually,
the guy got off the bike and he was happy or he was sad.
They actually sound enthusiastic. Okay, so first, you got a bike that was winning. Okay, and so you build what you think is a better version of it. And then you put God on it, right? And God's not winning. You're like, let's wait. You know, let's try tweaking. This bike's a winner. It's won. We're gonna try and keep working on that. You're gonna ride that. You're gonna ride that horse until you know the horse drops dead. Until it's really clear that it's the bike. Then you've got another problem. Success breeds conservatism. It's worked in the past. We don't want to change
it. You know,
it.
When I keep saying that Pedrosa's going to win the championship this year.
Yes.
You keep saying that Marquez is going to win.
Yes.
Totally conflicting what you just said. Success breeds conservatism, which is my point.
Yes.
The Honda guy's got to be careful.
Yes.
The Marquez guy's got to be careful.
Marquez absolutely has to be careful.
The other guy's got nothing else to lose. They ain't going to try harder. They might come up with a new thing. By the way, it's official.
What?
Pedrosa is going to win the championship. Ed Sorbo, here and now, on podcast number 18, for the record, that's my call. And this championship has not started yet. I'm calling it first.
Which championship?
MotoGP championship
in
2015 is going to be won by Pedrosa.
Danny Pedrosa.
The little engine that could.
You know,
we talked about this a few podcasts back.
I'm gonna
the wimpy way like everybody else. Oh, I'm going to pick Marquez.
I am. I'm going to say if the Ducati can keep its rear tire intact for this whole race, dude, it might not be Marquez. It might be one of the Ducati.
The Ducati doesn't have a chance of winning the championship.
The
guys that made that many mistakes in a row for that long and held on to whatever was wrong with that bike
for that long,
maybe until now, they might still be holding on. We don't know. We haven't had a race yet.
Right, right.
They cannot fix all of those cultural problems in one day. Remember the story about the mechanic who says to the engineer,
right.
Hey, buddy, it would be better, simpler,
right.
if the head of all these bolts were 8s or 10s or
right.
never mind having a 5 and a 7 and a 9 all in the same bike.
Right.
And the engineer looks at him like, why are you even talking to me?
But
right?
there, but
you
there
can't
is,
fix that problem overnight.
No, but you can't. But every now and then you could stumble. You could step into a pile of manure that's exactly the nutrient that you needed. And by the time you screw it up or by the time the other guys catch up, it's too late. 2009.
Okay, so I got 2 predictions. Pedrosa for the championship, which I don't even have to say then. Ducati isn't going to win because Pedrosa's on a Honda.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, 2008, Honda bails out of Formula One. Okay, at the end of the 2008 season, they're not really interested and they're not doing that well. They're not really committing resources to it. So they bail. They sell the remnants of their team to a guy named Ross Braun. Okay. The car has an interpretation of the rear wing that everybody else has looked at and said, the rule book says you can't do that. They go, we're last place anyway. We're no hopers anyway. We're going to do this to the rear wing and let them protest us if anything goes well. It works. It works spectacularly. They win. It's like a privately owned team, and they're winning Formula One race after Formula One race. And the other guys are going, they go, yeah, you know what? We'll appeal. Eventually, the FIA will ban this, right? About three races into the season, the FIA issues its ruling. It's legal. Everybody else goes, holy crap! It takes them about three more races, and then they make the modification. Then they start kicking Braun's butt. But they've got such a huge lead in the points that they basically, I don't think they win a race for the second half of the season or the last third of the season, but they cruise to the championship.
Can you get to the point of this car story?
Yeah. The point is that Ducati might have gotten it right enough that by the time the other teams figure out that they've really been hoodwinked, okay?
Okay.
That they gave away too much in concessions, and if they just don't touch the bike and it's good enough to win at the beginning of the season, by the time Honda and Yamaha make up the gap.
Okay. That's my point. If they did that time with the hard tire,
right,
then they're going to lose their fuel allotment once they start winning.
Won't matter. Because right now...
And what's the other thing that they lose?
Their allotment is 24 liters. It says that if they win three races, they go down to 22. They're already still finishing races on 22.
And then what's the other thing they get? More engines? They lose that?
Yeah, they still have more engines, and they still get to bring development.
Yeah, okay, but they still will have to beat Pedrosa.
They will have
to beat... By the way, his nickname is now Jupiter Kajiwara.
Jupiter Kajiwara.
Which is a little Japanese guy from Hawaii that I used to race against.
I read that on the internet.
I watched many times where he just accelerated away from me because he's small. Two-minute board.
Ed! You have a confession to make to the motorcycling universe about the installation of a dial-a-jet onto a motorcycle. That was pure
back
voodoo
in the day,
magic.
when jet kits first came out, DynoJet was the first.
I think so.
And then Factory Pro not too long after. And a jet kit for you fuel-injected kids is a selection of different jets, main jets, and maybe a pilot jet. And a needle that had a different taper, mm-hmm. And had grooves in it so you could move the clip up and down so that the thing was tunable.
Right.
And it came with instructions, and you could buy a stage one kit or a stage two or stage three.
Depending on what else you did to the motor.
Airbox mods, no airbox mods, pipe, no pipe, whatever. You followed the instructions, you put the thing in, and it worked really well. Because remember, what you're comparing it to was before this, you couldn't get different needles,
right,
and you didn't have a dyno.
Right.
So there's a huge improvement.
All right.
Okay. But they didn't have jet kits for every single kind of bike.
Right.
And there was a company that wanted to compete, and they made a thing called Dial-A-Jet. And Dial-A-Jet was simply you tapped into the intake manifold through where you would put the vacuum gauge sensor, right? So there's a hole there already. And it was just like a low-speed fuel correction jet. Mm-hmm. The vacuum at the end of this little nozzle would suck fuel out of the float ball, and it had a little thing you could turn to change the size of the hole going. So that was a dial, and it was a jet. And I had, Sport Bike Hawaii had a 550 Vision.
Okay.
That was kind of a trick, water-cooled V-twin,
yeah.
Stupid front end, and downdraft carburetors. So the front end was pathetic. It was dumb beyond belief. But we had a GPZ 1100 we weren't using anymore. Crankshaft broke off the end. And so we put that front end onto the bike.
Okay.
It was a massive improvement. But we were stuck with these stupid carburetors. And so Dial-A-Jet was the only thing that you could get. And it didn't work very well, but the downdraft carburetors were so bad that it made it a little bit better. Interesting fact, the first 24 hour that Team Hawaii ever did,
uh-huh,
1986, on a Honda Hawk, 400 twin with a 500 interceptor front end.
Right.
So the front rim was wider than the rear rim. We did the whole race on one front slick and one bias ply high sport rear tire.
Oh, dear God.
The front tire was bigger at the end of the race than the beginning because the bike wasn't fast enough to need any braking, so we never cleaned the rubber off in the center that we were picking up from riding around. So when the bike came home from the race, the front slick went on to Eric Phillipson's 600 Ninja,
right,
for a number of sprint races. And the rear high sport went onto the back of that 550 Vision. And a guy named Vince Bauer was racing it. He was a Marine customer of ours. And somebody else, Vince and somebody else, in a 4 hour. And the bike won its class. So the tire needed 24-hour and a 4-hour.
So based on the evidence at our hand, clearly the Dial-A-Jet was the reason that the bike was winning. And therefore, the technology of the Dial-A-Jet is proven to be effective.
It might have also had something to do with the crazy Marine riding the bike and didn't care that they had no ground clearance and the pipe was dragging. And you have a round pipe. Right. At the end of the race, it was completely flat. Like he pushed in the pipe all in one that all ground down. Looked really cool.
That probably altered the jetting to the point where it actually it made ran okay. Better. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.
See ya.